We've identified Ethan's record as one that's troubling, and we think will be devastating to the residents of Anchorage.
National conservative groups enter the Anchorage mayor's race. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, April 10th. Good evening, I'm Ann Hillman. Also tonight, Tenaina Daycare Center finds a new home, at least temporarily.
Those conversations became how long could we stay here? And St. Mary's is extremely kind.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Spinard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build from ground to roof to everything in between. Spinard Builder Supply is here to build with you.
Earn a Master of Public Administration from the University of Alaska Southeast online on your schedule while having the structure of the classroom and the accessibility of e-learning. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS.
As the legislature enters its final days, the budget is the main concern. Alaska faces a multi-billion dollar revenue shortfall, and even expenditures that have been considered sacrosanct are now seeing reductions. The cuts to education are among the most controversial. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez joins us to discuss them. Hello, Alexandra. So right now, just lay things out. What are most of the cuts?
Arguably the most contentious cut we've seen so far is a reduction to the base student allocation. That's the money that a school gets for each child enrolled. That formula fund has been flat for years, and the legislature raised it as part of a major package that tweaked a number of different education policies, in addition to giving more money to schools. Last week, the Senate reduced that money by $50 million, and that's made a lot of people both inside and outside of the Capitol unhappy. The House Speaker has already said that members of his caucus are going to have a hard time accepting that.
Tell us a bit more about the public response.
That budget cut was made at the last possible step in the committee process, so the public never got a chance to testify in person or by phone on the matter. Legislators have said their inboxes have been flooded with complaints about the cuts. The group Great Alaska Schools, which is basically a grassroots education advocacy group that became very well known in the Capitol last session, they've also reactivated. They're holding a rally outside the building on Saturday, and they've been paying visits to legislators this week.
And they've also been rallying here in Anchorage. So is the legislature planning to spend much money on school construction?
So at $150 million, the capital budget that Governor Bill Walker sent to the legislature was pretty bare bones. There wasn't really a lot in there for school construction or renovation compared to previous years. The only new school project that really stood out was money for the Kivalina School, which the state is legally obligated to cover because of a long-fought education lawsuit known as the Casile case. That case dealt with funding disparities between urban and rural schools. This week, the Senate Finance Committee briefly removed money for that project and the road required to build it. Kivalina is experiencing serious erosion and has actually sued oil companies over the village's destruction. Because the village is expected to disappear in the near future, the current plan is to build the school outside the community, along with a road to it. And this is the hang-up for the Senate Finance Committee. While they added the money back in for the school itself, most members did not believe the road funding was required for the state to meet its legal obligation, even though you can't exactly build a school if you don't have a road to get to it. After a day of back and forth on the subject, the committee met just before 9 p.m. on Thursday night to take up amendments. The senator who represents the district, Donnie Olson, a Democrat, tried to get the money back in, but he was unsuccessful.
Should we expect to see any of the money put back into the budget?
A number of senators have already explicitly said that. Even if people don't necessarily like education being used as a bargaining chip, some lawmakers, you know, have really stressed that they just don't like making reductions to education and their school systems in the first place. And, you know, with voters, it's a really politically unpopular place to trim the budget. But having a baseline for cuts in there gives the Senate some leverage with the House in trying to get some of their own priorities through.
Thanks for joining us, Alexandra. That was APRN's Capitol correspondent, Alexandra Gutierrez, joining us from Juneau. With time winding down in the scheduled 90-day session, questions remain about whether or not legislators can agree on Governor Bill Walker's proposal to expand and reform Medicaid. House Finance Committee co-chair Steve Thompson said he's concerned with whether thousands of people can be added to a system he calls broken. Senate Health and Social Services Committee Chair Bert Stedman says he thinks that financially it works in the state's best interest to go ahead with expansion and reform. If expansion doesn't pass, some believe Walker, by law, could seek authority from the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee to accept and spend federal money tied to expansion, and that even if the committee disapproves, he could move forward. A Walker spokeswoman says the administration is focused on working with lawmakers. Major conservative political groups are stepping into the Anchorage mayoral race. As KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports, the May runoff between Amy Dombosky and Ethan Berkowitz is drawing increasing attention from state and national organizations hoping to influence local politics.
Americans for Prosperity is a political group based in Virginia, backed by the Koch brothers, that advocates for conservative causes. Jeremy Price is the spokesman for the Alaska chapter and says they don't endorse candidates, but will be informing Anchorage voters about their two choices for mayor.
We've identified Ethan's record as one that's troubling and we think will be devastating to the residents of Anchorage.
Price says in the past, Berkowitz has supported higher taxes and larger government. Americans for Prosperity is still developing a strategy for how to connect with voters, and Price says that will determine whether or not they're required to file financial disclosures with the Alaska Political Offices Commission. Price says their funding comes from both inside and outside of Alaska.
We don't disclose who our donors are, but the longer our presence in Alaska is, the more we receive donations from Alaskans.
Political action groups are barred from coordinating with campaigns directly. However, the Dombosky campaign does appear to be drawing on the state's conservative political resources. Before winning the second slot in the runoff election, Dombosky received endorsements from high-profile conservative politicians Meade Treadwell and Joe Miller. Now, Miller's former advisor, Matt Johnson, is working as Dombosky's campaign manager. And as of 2 weeks ago, she's brought on David Boyle to handle communications. Boyle was the chairman for the 2008 McCain-Palin campaign in Alaska.
And I believe, let's say, the conservatives in this city, from fiscal conservatives, social conservatives, will see that there's a very distinct difference between Amy Dombosky's principles and policies and her opponent's more liberal policies.
For the last several years, Boyle has led the Alaska Policy Forum, a conservative think tank that advises state legislators on issues like education and healthcare reform. Boyle says this weekend, the Dombosky staff will be drafting policy points and a campaign strategy for the weeks ahead.
As you know, the assembly has a liberal majority on it, and I think we need some balance there like we do in most areas of government. So I think we need a conservative mayor, and Amy's going to provide the conservative mayor.
The Berkowitz campaign is also receiving support from political action groups, though they're more parochial and traditional players in local politics. Anchorage labor and public employee unions have donated to the Berkowitz campaign, and the National Education Association's Anchorage chapter is supporting him. The Alaska Democratic Party made robocalls and sent out emails to registered party members during the first phase of the election, and Communications Director Travis Smith says they'll continue to be involved in the runoff.
We'll be contacting voters in a variety of ways, phoning and door knocking, for example.
The Berkowitz campaign disagrees with the claims about his record from Americans for Prosperity. Communications manager Nora Moore says that during his time in the legislature, Berkowitz was part of a bipartisan coalition that worked on budget solutions when oil was $9 a barrel.
I think that's very interesting that Americans for Prosperity is playing in this mayor's race. And the fact that they're coming in talking about these issues, claiming to care about what Anchorage voters want, when really Anchorage voters are talking about, number one, public safety, the city budget, and public education. And they haven't talked about any of those issues, and that raises some red flags.
Earlier in the day, candidates met with officials from the union representing the Anchorage Police Department, who have so far not made any endorsements in the mayor's race. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, exploring Anchorage's 90-plus languages.
Start looking at languages and cultures and stuff, and you realize why people do certain things a certain way. It's beautiful.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
Join Alaska Public Media and participate in our statewide live online social screening and chat about the film The Home Stretch, Friday, April 17th from 12 to 1 p.m. Be part of the conversation about homeless teens in our communities. More at alaskapublic.org.
If you want to comment on Shell's plan to drill in the Chukchi Sea this summer, now is your chance. The U.S. Bureau of Ocean Energy Management announced today that it considers Shell's latest exploration plan and supporting documents sufficient enough to begin an official review. The determination kicks off a public comment period that lasts through the end of April. Shell's multi-year plan calls for returning to the Chukchi Sea with two rigs to drill up to six wells, all into its Berger prospect. That's in shallow water about 70 miles northwest of the village of Wainwright. The company can only operate during the summer and has to pull its equipment out before fall ice returns. Shell drilled one partial well in the area in 2012, but was not allowed to penetrate the petroleum layer because its containment dome was inoperable. It was one of a series of mishaps that marred the season. The earlier plan called for a dozen support vessels. This time, Shell says it expects to have about 30, including tugs, anchor handlers, and ice management vessels. Although Shell expects to again use Dutch Harbor as a resupply base, it proposes to keep its well containment barges and tugs moored in Kotzebue Sound. Federal regulators now have 30 days to consider Shell's exploration plan. Environmental groups issued a volley of critical statements today, calling Arctic drilling unsafe and the regulatory process rushed. Meanwhile, Shell's attorneys appeared in federal court this afternoon to argue for a restraining order against Greenpeace. The environmental group sent a half dozen activists to camp on one of Shell's Arctic rigs as it's towed across the Pacific Ocean. If Shell gets its way, the group would have to surrender to the master of the Blue Marlin, effective immediately. Shell's also seeking a preliminary injunction, which would keep Greenpeace away from the rest of its Arctic fleet. The oil company got a similar buffer zone during its last drilling season in 2012. Judge Sharon Gleason did not issue a ruling on either of Shell's requests this afternoon. A decision is expected in the coming days. This week, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council has been looking at ways to cut back on the number of Chinook salmon that get scooped up by the commercial trawl boats in the Bering Sea. The goal is to send more salmon back to subsistence users around the state. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal has more.
It hardly needed to be said, but as state biologist Katie Howard pointed out in a presentation to the North Pacific Council,
these recent declines in run abundance for Chinook salmon is really a statewide phenomenon, but it has been very notable in Western Alaska stocks.
That's led to commercial closures and subsistence restrictions around the region. At the same time, Western Alaska salmon made up about half of all the Chinook that were pulled up by commercial trawlers last year when they were out looking for pollock in the Bering Sea. Researchers have spent the past few days trying to explain how the North Pacific Council could change that. One option is to make trawl vessels fish earlier in the year when there are fewer salmon feeding in the Bering Sea. Another is to increase penalties for boats with the worst track records. Alan Haney is with the Alaska Fisheries Science Center.
Sorry, okay, there's a speed limit, and if you go over the speed limit, there's a, you know, there's something that you're going to pay.
Signing up for fines and voluntary closures is part of the reason why the pollock fleet has avoided heavy rules on bycatch until now. The pollock fleet has never come close to catching their absolute limit of 60,000 Chinook or having the harvest immediately shut down. Lowering their cap is technically an option, but the North Pacific Council's advisory board voted against it this week. As Haney, the Alaska Fisheries Science Center scientist, pointed out,
one thing that's really become clear in terms of assessing the impacts on the fleet, The impacts aren't just a little more fuel, they're big changes in product value that people, when they move off of fish that are the optimal size and move somewhere else, there's a real loss in that sense.
Haney says it won't be possible to account for those losses before the North Pacific Council takes a final vote this weekend. When they do, they'll be down one member. NOAA's Office of General Counsel asked Simon Kinneen to recuse himself from the vote on salmon bycatch. Kinneen is a vice president for the Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation. As a community development quota group, they have their own piece of pollock quota and ownership shares in other seafood businesses. Lauren Smoker is an attorney with the NOAA Office of General Counsel. She explains,
if a council member has financial interests that exceed 10% of the harvesting or processing in a fishery that'll be affected. That is a threshold that has been exceeded, and a recusal determination follows.
Kanin appealed the ruling, but it will still stand. In Anchorage, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
It's been just over 2 months since Tenaya Early Childhood Development Center was informed it would need to vacate its space at the University of Alaska Anchorage. Now, the center has reached an agreement to stay temporarily at St. Mary's Episcopal Church. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
Tenaya was already planning on leaving their space at UAA for the summer while renovations are made to the Wells Fargo Sports Complex. So the center was reaching out to St. Mary's, but Tenaya director Stephanie O'Brien says once the center found out it had to find a new home, the discussions changed course.
Those conversations became how long could we stay here? And St. Mary's is extremely kind and has been very generous to offer their space to us for as long as we need.
Reverend Michael Burke, the rector of St. Mary's Episcopal Church, compares Tenaya's situation to that of a neighbor who lost their home.
Tenaya has lost their home. That's just tragic. And we're just a neighbor. We're just a neighbor that says, okay, we'll double up as best we can, and we'll help and support you through this period while you figure out your next steps.
The church already serves 29 community organizations and nonprofits each month. Despite all the activity, though, Burke says there's plenty of room for Tenaya.
We believe the people of St. Mary's are up to the task. We believe Tenaya's up to the task. We'll all have to be patient with one another, and we'll have to be acutely aware of other people's needs. But I think this is something we can do.
Burke says hosting Tenaya will not impact St. Mary's Creative Preschool, but it will require some extra work over the weekends to accommodate the church's Sunday school programs. Discussions between UAA and Tenaya have been ongoing since early February, and Stephanie O'Brien says they will continue to explore future partnerships with the university.
But right now their answer is no, so we're just kind of focusing on, okay, great, we're moving to St. Mary's. They're an amazing place to be, amazing group of people, and I think we'll be a good fit.
The university was providing Tenaya its current space free of charge. Tenaya will be paying rent in their new location, but O'Brien says St. Mary's gave the Child Care Center a generous offer.
It's definitely affordable for us, and we're able to be able to make the payments and take on those bills totally fine. Our enrollment will need to be at 100% at all times, so we're actively enrolling for our summer program for school-age kids. We'll have some spaces come up in preschool.
Tenaya will keep its entire staff, and O'Brien says they will still be able to handle the same number of children. Tenaya's last full day at UAA is May 8th, and they will reopen at St. Mary's on May 12th. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The men and women of Public Employees Local 71 maintain over 20,000 miles of roads and runways and cook and care for those in Alaska's pioneer homes. Public Employees Local 71, working hard for Alaska, working hard for you. This message is sponsored by Public Employees Local 71.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Lisa Fu. This week on AK, exploring identity. More than 90 languages are spoken in Anchorage, and one resident is trying to learn and teach about every single one as part of a new podcast. KSKA's Ann Hillman found out the project comes from his desire to discover the diversity of his own background.
Corey Benefriam sits on the couch in his one-room Fairview apartment, his wavy hair slicked back and tidy mustache styled with upturned points. A couple of years ago, he tried an experiment. He walked around the Diamond Center with an audio recorder, asking people to guess his ethnicity.
Native with Mexican.
I think you're a black or mixed or something else.
Black and white, but I don't know. Okay. I know this is terrible. This one is awkward.
It's a question Benefriam has been asking himself for years. What is his background, his identity? He's been mapping it out on his body.
Walk me through your tattoos.
Oh, we could spend all day on this.
Okay, let's start with your arms.
Okay.
Music notes loop up one forearm. An outline of France adorns the other.
My cousin does tattoos in Michigan, and so a lot of the times it's like, hey, let's order pizza and do tattoos. And, you know, before you know it, you're getting a tattoo that you don't regret so much, but as much as you're like, I wish I would put more thought into that.
The map of France is one of those. Ben Ephraim says he was trying to honor his mother's family, but they've actually been in Canada for more than 200 years.
So on the backside, I got the maple leaf. The coordinates there are for the city that they immigrated to from France.
Ben Ephraim says he knows a lot about his mother's side of the family, but much less about his father's. His dad wasn't around when he was a kid growing up in Michigan. He says he knew the basics. His father is a mixture of Moroccan, Ethiopian, and African-American, and he's Jewish. But Ben Ephraim says his mother never taught him about his father's cultural or religious heritage. So as an adult, he picked up a book on Judaism.
I just couldn't put the book down. Like, it just, everything spoke to me and it all made sense in the Old Testament. It clicked and this and that.
He bought himself a yarmulke on eBay, went to a synagogue, and eventually converted. His father's past is now reflected in the tattoo on Ben Ephraim's leg.
I have the Khamsa, the Star of David. Inside the Star of David is the green star from the Moroccan flag. In Arabic, it says, Morocco is in my blood. And then in Hebrew down here, it says, my heart beats for Israel.
Ben Ephraim says his quest to find out about his own heritage made him curious about other people's. So he started a podcast called 90 Plus. He's trying to track down people who speak each of the more than 90 languages represented in the Anchorage School District.
We can sit down by the table or by the couches.
Ben Ephraim walks into a cozy townhouse adorned with plush furniture and a friendly dog. He sits down with a high school student from Brazil and pulls out his mic.
Okay, my full name is Mateus Araújo de Alves Vogueira.
He asks Malgara about moving to the U.S. as a small child, learning English, speaking Portuguese at home. Eventually, he gets to the heart of the matter.
Someone asked you, like, how would you describe yourself? Would you consider yourself, like, a Brazilian, an American, an Alaskan, a mixture of the things? Like, how do you describe yourself?
A mutt, I guess, in that regard.
He says he's influenced by his mother's strong Brazilian culture, even though he doesn't really speak Portuguese. But he's also shaped by growing up in Alaska and by living in Germany for a year. He says all of these things contribute to his identity. And for Ben Ephraim, conversations about language are in many ways just a vehicle for talking about culture and identity, and for understanding those around you.
Start looking at languages and cultures and stuff, and you realize why people do certain things a certain way. It's beautiful.
Back in his apartment, he shows me his mezuzah. It's a small metal ornament that holds a Jewish prayer and is affixed to the doorframe of a home. His has symbols from both Judaism and Christianity. We talk about what it means to both of us. We've led very different lives, but both come from mixed religion families. Both love radio. It's a conversation we wouldn't have had if he hadn't started on the podcast.
Do I really think at the end of the day that my little podcast is going to create world peace? No. But it might make someone who normally otherwise would think badly about someone else, you know, once listening to maybe my podcast and like, okay, like that's a similar upbringing that I had, even though they grew up in, you know, some totally other part of the world.
Right now, he's only produced a few episodes. He says he's stocking them up and they will begin airing on an Anchorage station soon. For AK, I'm Ann Hillman.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week, we're hearing from Lupe Mariquin, who has lived in Anchorage for nearly 40 years. She moved to Alaska from Michigan and fell in love with it almost immediately.
I was married to a man in the military, and we chose Alaska as our destination on the dream sheet. And somehow we and our best friends got to come up to Alaska, and I'm the only one left here. Everyone else left for another state or whatever. And I just could never leave because I love it here so much. Well, it was my first real home away from my parents, and at first I was just so desperately homesick. And then I would fly home to go visit my parents and come back to Alaska, and the mountains were just always saying, yay, you're back. And I just felt like I was coming home from the very beginning. No place has ever touched me like Alaska has. I like the small town sort of feel of the state, and yet we are so spoiled with our arts. So I feel very spoiled here. Plus, the diversity of the people here. The food is incredible. I mean, we have so many languages. Last I heard, it was 96 different languages spoken in our school district. And so we have a lot of opportunity for good food, good ethnic food, great mix of celebrations from all cultures. So the diversity is fantastic here, and I miss it when I visit other places. I feel like in Alaska, there's no other place where I could feel the extremes that I feel here, like beautiful color, the close touch with nature, the opportunity every day to get my shoes all dirty with mud or, you know, snow on my head and the wind in my face. So that's part of what I love about Alaska, is I get to be in touch, feel it up close and personal. Yeah, I'm pretty still excited after almost 40 years of living here, about living here. I mean, there's no place I'd rather be.
Lupe Mariquin lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. If you want to tell your story, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ann Hillman, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes and Lauren Rosenthal in Anchorage. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Ann Hillman. Have a fantastic weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast offers an online occupational endorsement in financial institutions, covering banking and accounting concepts and principles. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.